It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 237. The Yankees take the series from the Astros. As I was just saying, Scott, they just snatched that game on Tuesday, and then Wednesday, Severino came back, shoved the bats down the Astros' throats, exactly what we needed them to do. This was one of those series that we're going to look back at and say, ooh, that was messy, but I'll take it.
Well, yeah, no doubt about it. It was messy, but that's the beauty, and I think that's why it actually affects the Astros in such a way that it's so painful, because they knew they had an opportunity to win those first two games. I mean, they should have won the second game, 100%, no doubt. Yankees had zero business winning that game. And then tonight, you know, you think on their end, if they're feeling good after winning two, they got Keuchel, maybe a little bit more confidence going against Severino. It was a huge swing the way that that whole thing went down. And you know, the effect that they lost that game, mm-hmm. that stings. And I love that.
Definitely. And even though we're not even in June yet, and the Yankees and Astros are done playing for the regular season, everyone thinks they're going to meet them again in the playoffs. They're going to be one of the last teams standing. Yankees are going to be one of the last teams standing. So there's a solid 4 months where we're not going to see the Astros again. But the next time the Yankees play them, they're going to have the confidence that they beat them. What was it? Five out of seven times, right?
Yep.
And they own their bullpen. Their starters are filthy. We know their starters are filthy. No one is hitting Justin Verlander and Cole, who the Yankees actually didn't even see. And Charlie Morton has turned into the second coming of Roger Clemens, apparently. But but at least the Yankees have that confidence. They have that swagger the next time they play them. And like you just said, there's some doubt. There's got to be doubt in the Astros after the way they just totally shit away that game on Tuesday.
Well, yeah, and I think we're going to be looking at what, you know, obviously now that they're finished, they're not going to be playing each other, so there's not going to be a head-to-head matchup to determine anything. But, you know, as the season's going on and we're getting closer and closer to the playoffs, or, you know, situations that we're going to start looking at records and how things are going to play out in the playoffs. And, you know, God willing, the Yankees continue to play well and we're all in this position. But we're going to be looking at that record because it's going to be very important. And I know the Yankees did well during the regular season this year in Houston, but you don't want to go to Houston extra game in the playoffs. We saw how that worked. We saw how the Yankees played in Houston. And we know damn well what this team is at home at Yankee Stadium. They're a different squad. They're probably the best home team. I'd argue they're the best home team in the league. The Red Sox are probably close as well. But the Yankees are right there as far as the way that they play in their own ballpark. So it's important to get this, to get that home field advantage into the playoffs. There's a lot of things they're going to be playing for going into the playoffs.
Yeah, and that Astros team, that especially their Astros offense, seems to be a different thing at home versus on the road.
Yeah, they thrive. They do. They thrive at home. There's no doubt about it.
Do you think it's kind of stupid, the baseball, you play 162 games and the Yankees are already done with the Astros? They're done with they're not going to face, you know, many teams more than just twice. And not only is it just twice, but it's twice in the matter of 2-3 weeks.
Well, I mean, that's what interleague play does for you. You have to go play a whole bunch of other teams in the other league. If the interleague play didn't happen, we'd probably be playing them again.
Right.
And you'd have more of those, you know, bigger rivalries because you're playing teams longer and more often in the same league or division. And so there's a give and take with the whole playing the teams in the American League and the National League. You don't build up those other rivalries as much outside of your own division. So yeah, there's a give and take there. But I like it. It'll be interesting. You know, I like the whole premise behind the American League not playing the National League the way it used to be. I think that's it's something to be desired at that point because you don't know what to expect. And you just get something similar to that. You know, if we do face the Astros at some point, we haven't played them in a long time, so it'll be a mystery.
So the last time we recorded was after Monday's game, after Verlander shut him down once again, and they come out on Tuesday. And maybe the most infuriating first seven innings of a baseball game I've ever watched. Yeah. Just booting from the first pitch, Gleyber Torres makes another throwing error. Oh, really? It's going to be one of those nights? And the errors just kept on coming. The fourth inning wasn't an error, and Duhar falls down on a play that you could have at least gotten one, maybe two outs. That leads to runs. Then there's two throwing errors, and Duhar and CC make throwing errors in the fifth inning. Both of those lead to runs.
I think CC should have gotten two errors on that throw.
Right, because he booted the ball on the comebacker. Sabathia is the worst fielding. I mean, he is.
Just put it in your pocket.
Yeah, he's better off just blocking the ball with his gut back to Gary Sanchez and let him throw the guy out.
The funny thing about that play, though, is it looked like he had so much confidence and like he was going to grab it and do this quick spin throw and get over there. It reminded me of the time when I was playing in an adult basketball league and tried to do a spin move for a layup. And by the time I finished, I was behind the backboard. I was like, damn, that did not go as well as I thought it would be in my head.
About 180 through the 360. Yeah, you were like, this was a stupid decision, Scott.
It was such slow motion where in my brain I had this like nice, tight little whoop and then, you know, easy layup. But
well, you know what it is.
That's what it kind of looked like for Sabathia.
Sabathia's got that young man mentality. And
well, right,
he does,
exactly.
He's driving that old man body.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So that's why, you know, the body did not match what the mind had in mind, and the ball just took off.
Right. Well, what's Andujar's fault? He's got a young body. Gleyber Torres got a young body. Sanchez, young body. They all just threw the ball around the ballpark.
Sanchez has like a 50-year-old body, but he's in a young man's mind. He's trapped. The other guys, that was a lot of mental lapses. That's it. Just young guys not focusing all the way through a play.
Yeah, and it's like chicken or the egg, because Sabathia could not pick up the errors in the fifth inning, but at the same time, those errors put him in a horrible spot, and the Astros made him pay.
Well, and you know, when he's pitching, you don't want to have that many opportunities where he's got to go back out and pitch around things and throw more pitches, because you know, we know right now at this point in his career, he's throwing more pitches as it is because of the way that he has to approach guys. He's nibbling a little bit more around the strike zone. He's not going after anybody really, you know, head to head anymore. He's got to throw these pitches. So when you're adding another at bat or another two at bats, I mean, that's a good amount of pitches. That's probably one error, two errors could absolutely knock him back another half inning. So it's a big deal when you have CC throwing additional pitches. And, you know, for this time, it happened like, what, how many errors? There were five official errors on the game. Not
five
to mention
errors.
All the other things. I mean, Sanchez threw the ball into center field twice, I think, at least.
Yeah.
And Duhar falling. I mean, it was messy.
Yeah. Well, according to Brian Kenny, there would have been no errors. But I would have actually given out six errors.
There were a lot. It was just one of those games you're feeling like, it's just not going our way. It's just not going our way. It's just not looking good right now. Charlie freaking Morton, after getting touched up a little early, goes back out and starts pitching pretty well, and the Yankees are just self-destructing on the other side of the ball.
And the 10th inning play with Chapman on the mound, that was setting up to be another infuriating moment. He can't find the plate. He's throwing 100 mile an hour darts in the dirt. He's throwing 100 mile an hour darts to the backstop, and it just happens to get a clubhouse kick and bounce right back to Sanchez. Just a cluster of a game, cluster of an inning. It somehow worked out for the Yankees in the end.
Well, it was pretty ridiculous at that point, because I mean, that's, you see Brett Gardner come up and just I mean, the clutchest of clutch. That is just such a big home run in a big situation from this guy. And, you know, now we're seeing Brett Gardner do Brett Gardner things and act like the guy that we kind of expected at this point. But, I mean, in that situation, to go up there and to get that, to put up that at bat and put the ball over the wall, I mean, just a massive. And then the bounce back, I mean, it was a beautiful play. That ball hit Gary Sanchez in the glove on the turn. It was perfect.
It was like the wall. It's like when you're playing Pepper with the wall.
It was amazing. It really was.
The Yankees, as far as defense goes, it's been ugly the last few days. The five errors obviously doesn't help. So they're now fifth in Major League Baseball in errors with 37. Some of the advanced metrics show that they are a better defensive team. They're seventh in DRS, and then they are 11th in UZR. So they're above the middle of the pack in some of the advanced metrics. But the thing that's really frustrating and really annoying, especially on this homestand, is just sort of the mental lapses and the dumb defensive errors. It's not necessarily just the errors. It's the dumb defensive errors that really piss me off.
So when you're saying dumb defensive errors, you're saying the ones that were, you know, like Andujar clutches a couple times and then throws it lackadaisical from a three-quarter position and it pulls Bird off the back. Like that, are you considering as a dumb error at that point?
Yeah, and or the two that Gleyber made is the first play of the game, and he made another kind of rush throw on the first play of the game. And then the ball, I forget what inning it was, but it was a chopper up the middle. There was a guy running to second, and you could see he was thinking, am I going to tag this guy? Am I going to step on the bag? Am I going to throw to first? So it's sort of like an overthinking error. Maybe dumb isn't the right word, but just overthinking it.
See, I actually had a different take on the last one, because on the last one where he was coming up the middle, I looked at that replay a whole bunch of times, and people were talking about the fact that he was trying to tag that guy. But if you watch the replay again, and you just keep like looking all the way through, he was trying to come through that ball. His eyes didn't come off the ball. It didn't look like he was trying to tag it. He just came up too quickly. It's like he's just rushing things a little bit and taking them for granted, like the ball's already in his glove, or on the throw, he's got the time, just going to make an easy throw, and then he looks up and the guy's, you know, three quarters of the way down the line, and he's got to rush the throw and then it's off. It's things like that. It's like the timing of the actual play, the speed of the game type of things are, it seems to be the ones that are getting to him right now. And he's not processing things in a way that's, that has really any immediacy or emergency to them. I mean, he's almost taking them for granted, like they're going to happen. You know what I mean? So just a little lackadaisical, but I really, those things to me are just, you know, I think that part of it is speed of the game. I think you're seeing some better athletes, obviously, in the majors. And, you know, I just think he'll clean these things up. I think they're very much young guy errors.
Almost seems like he's in a defensive slump. Everyone thinks you can just only go into offensive slumps. Defense never goes into a slump, but that I don't think that's true at all.
Well, he's still making the phenomenal plays. It's not like he's not making
plays. The phenomenal plays are not anything he needs to think about. Phenomenal plays are instincts and reflexes and athleticism, which obviously he has. It's the thinking plays that are getting him in trouble. And I think that could be, for whatever reason, a defensive slump. It's almost like I'm not saying he has the yips. That's not what I'm saying, but it's almost like that sort of mental thing where Chuck Knoblauch throws the ball 19 rows into the stands because he just can't freaking think his way. He's trying to think his way to a throw instead of just using his talent.
See, I actually don't agree. I don't think that it's – I think that what he's doing right now is literally – it's as simple as thinking, taking things for granted. That's it. I don't think it's anything
that's
more.
That's equally as bad then.
I guess it's just, but I don't think he's meaning to do it. He's just 21 years old.
I'm not mad at him.
And these things are just, unfortunately, you know, they're happening. But I honestly, like, I could see right now that when he had such a bad game like that, and then he goes up to the plate and hits that base hit, you know, knowing that he blocked everything out, that's what's leading me to know that this kid is just going to put that shit behind him and just go forward and figure it out and fix it. He's the kind of guy that will fix it fast, very fast. And he won't take those things for granted because he works that hard, and he it means that much to him, I think, to be very good. You know what I mean? He doesn't like, there's one thing I get from him is that he doesn't like disappointing people. He gets very mad at himself. And I think when you do that, then you could start rushing things and start doing like little mental errors. But I don't think it's anything having to do with abilities or, you know, even like real mental focus. I just think it's small little blips on the radar.
Well, if you listen to any of his post-game press conferences, which he's getting a lot of lately because he's always in the middle of something good, yeah, he always just says that he's happy to help out his team and help his teammates. I think it's because he's got a limited vocabulary in English, but I also give him a hell of a lot of credit for doing those post-game interviews in his second language. I think that shows the type of person and sort of teammate he wants to be.
Bottom line, this kid's going to be very, 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 very good for a long time, and I will take him in any clutch situation at any point.
Yeah.
And we have many of those guys. That's what I. This is an exciting bunch up and down the lineup. So just add another one to the mix of guys that could be very, very good.
9 out of 10 rookies, 9 out of 10 players after the night defensively that Gleyber Torres had goes up there in that situation and strikes out because he's down on himself or for whatever the reason. Instead, he gets the base hit, second walk off of the year. We've got some small sample disclaimer clutch stats that I'm going to throw out here, but 2 outs and runners in scoring position this year. He's 5 for 12 with 6 RBIs, and then late and close, which sort of just is anytime the game is, I think, 7th inning or later, and a close game, he's 8 for 17 with 2 homers and 7 RBIs. So far, the clutch numbers are there.
Yeah, the stage is not too big for him. That's what this leads me, and he loves playing up here. I think this kid wants to be great, and I think that, you know, he's got all the physical ability to do it, and he's in the right spot. So this is exciting to watch him play. Like, I love it. I love the what he's wearing, number 25 too. Love it.
Just to, cause you hate Mark Teixeira?
No, I love Jim Abbott. Love the number 25.
I also thought it was fitting that Gardner, so you had the oldest Yankee tying the game, the youngest Yankee winning the game. Gardner, you kind of mentioned earlier that he is starting to put up the numbers where we expect Gardner to be. He's now ranked 2nd in team offensive war, 1.6. And his WRC plus is 107, which is right where it was last year. I think it was 108 last year. So after everyone wanted to trade him, everyone wanted to bench him to get Clint Frazier up, Brett Gardner is exactly where we expect Brett Gardner to be.
Well, I don't think, I mean, how many people, raise your hand if you expected Brett Gardner to be 2nd in team offensive war? I don't think a lot of people even had him that high. So when you see numbers like that, you're surprised. But, you know, he's been putting together a good week and a half of baseball. And, you know, we're seeing this guy getting back. And he's still doing the things, even when he was slumping. And we've talked about this. Like, I feel like a freaking broken record, but I'll say it again. Even when he's slumping, he's getting on base. He's working the count. He's, he's doing the things he needs to do defensively. So even in a slump, similar to what Judge does, even when they're not hitting, they're contributing. Whether it's on defense, on the base pass, with good long at bats, they're still helping out. I mean, this is the important cog in this Yankees lineup.
Would you have played him today against Keuchel, even the lefty-lefty matchup, instead of Hicks? Sort of ride the hot hand? Because when we've seen Gardner get hot, doesn't matter who's out there throwing, he just gets hot.
Yeah, I probably would have played him instead of Hicks. I just don't think Hicks is, I mean, what did we say he was hitting against right-handed bats? Not what we expected him to hit, right? Like, or left-handed
against
pitching.
Lefties, right. Yeah.
When he's batting right-handed, he's been struggling. So yeah, I don't really see a massive upgrade there. That's a pure righty-lefty thing, but I don't know. You get a guy like Brett Gardner who's going as hot as he is, you can make that change and you could put him in center field. It's not like you need to put him out in left. You could still get another right-handed bat in there.
I definitely would have played Gardner because the question in Boone's mind was Gardner or Hicks. And this is not Dallas Keuchel 2015. And this is not Yankees 2015, obviously. I think, what is it? They've scored 11 runs in the previous 3 games against Keuchel and only 4 runs in the previous 7 starts before that. So this is not the same Keuchel. They have seen him enough. They have confidence against him. And Gardner, with the way he is playing right now, coming off 2-homer game, ties the game late. I just want that sort of momentum in the lineup. And
yeah.
And Hicks got on base, I know, in the first inning today, ended up scoring a run early, but I don't know. I don't like him as the leadoff hitter.
I don't like him either as the leadoff hitter
batting right. It's not, if anything, let's see Gleyber Torres there, like we said on the last episode.
If you're going to make that switch and you're going to do that at some point, yeah, I think Gleyber's such a better. And again, like I'm also one for not changing things up that are working very well. So I have no problem with Boone, having Gleyber down, you know, towards the after all the big guys in the lineup. And, you know, if you want to make that change eventually, I think there's something going to be coming with Hicks at some point soon. I mean, he's going to have to – I know everybody says his job is safe, and right now it probably is. The Yankees are going well. He plays good defense. But there's a redhead dude that's playing really well in Scranton right now.
Yeah, it's already – we already get tweets and mailbags about when is Clint Frazier going to be called up. But it's – you can look at the advanced metrics for Hicks, and you can see – I'm sure the Yankees, that's why they're continuing to stick with him, that his advanced metrics say he should be better than his regular traditional stat line is showing. But how long before, I guess they can't look themselves in the mirror and say, well, we're sticking this guy in the minors who clearly shouldn't be there. Enough is enough. How long?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to, something's going to have to give at some point in the relatively near future. And you know, I know that after tonight's game, we're recording after the game. We haven't seen any moves yet, but it wouldn't surprise me if Tyler Austin was sent down. They were talking about how he was, or Brian Hoke had tweeted out saying that he was kept up for this game against Dallas Keuchel, and didn't do so hot, struck out a few times. And so there very well could be some corresponding move, whether that's Torres back up or, you know, maybe they look at a guy like Clint Frazier and see if they can't fit him in somewhere. I think there's some moves that they can do right now to be flexible. And Frazier's smoking the ball.
Golden sombrero for Tyler Austin. Is this so you think this is the would they,
I mean,
send
what is
down?
He, his last 0 for 17? Is that I thought I saw that number today. It's something like that. He's not been doing great. And yeah, I mean, we already knew this was the big debate over the past half a week is why did this happen? Well, we all know that it's going to be that revolving door. There's something's going to give. They're going to bring up either someone's hot, or if they need a particular spot to fill, you know, there's going to be some other things happening with, we got pitchers coming back soon. A lot of these guys that have been injured on the pitching staff are starting to make their return. They're starting to, you know, throw again and pitch again. Warren's back throwing again. We got Montgomery throwing off flat ground. So these things are happening with the pitching staff. There's going to be some changes, but it wouldn't surprise me if Frazier were to come up and Tyler Austin were to get sent down or Torres back up. You know, I think we're going to see a lot of this.
The whole reason we had said because Torres got sent down is for this stretch of games where they just want the extra bat in there and the extra arm, and they're not out of this stretch yet. So unless you plan on giving Didi a day off in the next 5 to 7 days, then what would be the point of calling Ronald Torres back up? He's just going to sit on the bench.
Right. And I think that's kind of, alluding to the fact that Clint Frazier might be, you know, one of those guys. I mean, if you're going to have Tyler Austin up, and he's there because of, he's a right-handed bat. Well, you could definitely play Neil Walker at first base if you needed to and have him bat there.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you have him there, or you could bring up Clint Frazier and take advantage of this guy who is on a mission right now and trying to really make an impact and swinging the bat well. I mean, everything is going pointed up for Clint Frazier right now, and it's the opposite right now, I'd say, for Tyler Austin. So I think Tyler Austin has leveled off a bit from what we were. I mean, it was a fun ride, and I still think he's a nice player, but I don't, you know, he's the sum of what we've been seeing, and he's definitely been struggling, you know, in and out of some little hot streaks.
He also didn't play for whatever it was, 5 days, comes off and strikes out 4 times against Keuchel and the Astros. So it's not exactly like he's been in there every day.
But that's the thing. That's the position he would be in anyway. So
true.
He would be a backup first baseman, and he would have to play every, you know, whenever they want to get Bird a day off. So, you know, what, 4 or 5 days? Every 4 or 5 days, that's when he's going to be called upon. So,
yeah,
you know, that's a big deal. And we saw already Tyler Wade couldn't handle that type of guy. I don't think every single player has that in them where they can sit for that long and then, you know, go out there and play. And I think that's what everybody has such a big issue with Toews, because he has proved that he can do that.
Yeah, it's not a normal trait to have. It's a very good trait.
No, yeah, absolutely. No, it's tough.
Another guy not going so hot is Gary Sanchez, and really Giancarlo Stanton too. Both struggled over the last homestand, last 8 games for Sanchez. He only has 2 hits, striking out over 30% of the time. And that at-bat he had on Tuesday night in the 9th inning with the winning run in scoring position, probably the worst at-bat of his career.
Yeah, it was not good. It was he looked lost. He's really looked lost over his last span, because I mean, he's swinging at bad pitches, And even today with the, I mean, it was a good piece of hitting. Don't get me wrong. He got the bat on the ball and basically hit it to where nobody was and drove in two runs. That was a big play in the game. It was a great piece of hitting just to make, you know, that contact and put the ball, just play a little game of pickle and get it to, you know, an open spot to drive in those runs. But he's still not seen. It doesn't look like he's seen the ball well, and he's certainly not making great contact. So, you know, he's got to figure that out. I mean, we're starting to see some extended cold streaks from Gary Sanchez, and that's not a great thing. I'm hoping that it's you know, just him not finding his groove. But at the same time, you wonder when you see that with a catcher, are there other things happening? Is he fatigued? Are his legs fatigued, and that's why he's not squaring up balls well? Or, you know, there might be other things happening here with just overall fatigue.
Well, it was less than 2 weeks ago he had that four-hit monster game in Kansas City. And then the next day is a Sunday, and he's on the bench, not even DHing, because Sonny Gray is on the mound. Thanks a lot, personal catchers. And since then, he's been nowhere to be found. So I don't know if it's fatigue. He's getting at least one out of every five starts off.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's why. He's not feeling it. He's getting a lot of these starts off, and I know Sonny Gray's been asking for a freaking Austin Romine, but, you know, we've seen Austin Romine a little bit more lately, too, so maybe we can mix this back up, too, and get rid of the
people want Austin thing. Romine as the starting catcher. It's bad, like 350 or whatever it is.
Yeah, and I'm saying we need to throw in a little Gary Sanchez in with Sonny Gray again. Maybe we could just totally reverse it, make him the personal catcher for Sonny Gray.
Yeah, I'm sure Sonny Gray would also come out after the game and say his stuff is great.
Oh, I guarantee you, he absolutely would. He doesn't know anything else. He's such a confident guy. What a confident guy he is. He believes in his abilities so much, even when they're bad.
We had said this lineup is like slump proof because if one guy's in a slump, the other eight guys are going to pick him up. But there's been times when the middle of the order has kind of been a black hole with Sanchez and Stanton, especially on this homestand. Stanton, before tonight's game, which I thought he looked a lot better, only had two hits, also striking out a ton. He was robbed of a double in the first inning off Keuchel. That could have actually totally changed Keuchel's outing. He ended up going five innings. He could have been knocked out earlier if that ball gets down. But like we said last time, Stanton goes up there sometimes, like with Sanchez, no approach, just swinging at those breaking balls, and the opposing pitcher knows it and just keeps throwing it to him, especially in key spots with runners on base.
Well, and you're also seeing right-handed pitchers that have any even semblance of gas. All they got to do is throw it up in the zone, and Stanton's not touching it. You saw that. I mean, the scouting report was out on him the last time we played the Astros in Houston when Verlander was pitching, and he went just three straight, boom, three fastballs up in the zone, and Stanton couldn't touch the ball, literally could not touch the ball. You saw that approach starting to happen with Charlie Morton as well, just throwing the ball hard up in the zone. He can't touch it. For whatever reason, he's not able to square up or even make contact. He fouled one of them off against Morton, but make contact with that hard fastball up in the zone. And we know now Charlie Morton throws hard because he chose to. So when you're doing that, it's tough. So he's definitely got a couple different areas that can be exploited right now. And that doesn't make anything, you know, that doesn't make it any easier for him to get back on the good side with any consistency when you have two very different pitches and two very different zones that can get you out.
Did you hear David Cohen on the broadcast on Tuesday actually give credibility to that claim of Charlie Morton, that he just decided to throw the ball, fastball more, throw it harder, and that's how he's built up velocity, is just doing it more?
I did not hear it. He said that that's no problem?
Yeah, he said that's how it works. You do something more, you get better at it.
I guess so, but not when you're 34 years old. There's another factor in this.
You say your fastball, okay, maybe your fastball goes from 93 to 94. I'll give you 95. He's touching 98 miles an hour.
You know, one of the big things that they were, there was an interview with Gerrit Cole talking about, you know, coming over and talking about Morton, their time in Pittsburgh together, and how did this happen, this transition. And the number one thing that he went back to and said, the reason why he's doing this now is because we're able to see that him actually pitch healthy, and that he had three different years of three different injuries, and he just never was really fully healthy. And that's what he's giving the credit to. He's giving the credit to finally a healthy Charlie Morton that can go out there and throw. And you know, maybe he's changed those mechanics a little bit. So maybe he was throwing under what he could when he was in Pittsburgh. Who knows? Or maybe it's the spin rate and whatever they're doing in Houston.
Great. Great. That not looking forward to facing that starting rotation in the playoffs. Just like we said at the top, let's hope it's at Yankee Stadium, the extra games at Yankee Stadium. Didi also has been coming around. I thought he's been making better contact, hitting the ball harder. He looked lost for an entire month. So maybe we just write off May and move on to June, and we get something closer to April Didi than May Didi.
Yeah, I mean, he looked good again today. I think he's definitely squaring the ball up. You can see he's just having better swings and better at bats. And I think we just saw a very, very bad month come after one of the hottest months we've seen in a long time. I mean, the guy was out of his mind to start the season. So you expect him to come back down to earth. You don't expect him to plummet and just stay in a hole for an entire month. But it looks like he's starting to get back, squaring up the ball. You know, I think once he starts doing that and has that confidence, we'll start seeing him, the ball go a little higher, and we'll start to see more doubles and the ball go out of the ballpark. So I'm not worried about Didi at all. I think he is, he's doing just fine. He's not going to be in the three spot very, very much though. I can tell you that.
Those days are probably over.
Yeah. I mean, it did well, right? He did well for the time that he was there, when he pushed the envelope. I mean, that's really when it started, right? Is when he got into that three spot.
Yep.
He was on fire, and he just started doing things. That and t-shirt time on Twitter, and Didi started erupting and hitting all sorts of home runs. So, but now we got the true number three hitter that the Yankees have been waiting for. And really, this lineup is just that much better when Bird is in the lineup. It just makes it so much more balanced.
It took all of three games for Boone to pencil Bird into that number three spot.
Yeah, you knew he was itching to do it. He wanted to do it on game one. He's that guy. He's the guy you want there.
Well, it's the lineup that we were planning for all of spring training. We still have not seen it because I think the day that Bird was in the three spot, Stanton was on the bench.
Yeah, we haven't seen the entire thing, but it's a thing of beauty. I mean, literally, Aaron Boone can really not screw things up too badly at all. I mean, he could do anything with it. He could literally just throw darts and guys go where they are, and you would have a ridiculous lineup. It's that good and that stacked.
The classic Billy Martin pick the lineup out of a hat.
Yeah,
antic.
You could. I mean, that's literally could happen because you're number nine hitter, or some days you're nine hitter, some days you're
five hitter,
some days somewhere throwing him in there. I mean, could hit anywhere in the lineup, anywhere, and you would be okay with that.
You mentioned earlier when we were talking about CC that if things don't go right, if he's not getting the plays behind him, it's just extra pitches, extra stress on him, and it's bad. He's going through a rough stretch, and I also think the defense is extra important because he gets a lot of soft contact. So the infield defense is especially key for Sabathia, and when there's errors behind him, it's going to look ugly. But I am here to calm everybody down because he went through two stretches that were even worse than what we're seeing right now last year. So in a four-start span last April 21st to May 9th, four starts, he gave up 22 earned runs. And then later in the year, three starts, July 27th to August 8th, 12 earned runs. So two times where I'm sure if we went back and listened, you and I were saying, is CC done? Is CC done? No, he wasn't done. I'm not ready to say he's done right now.
Well, and I think we saw it. We were saying that probably because we also saw, you know, the year before that, we saw struggles. And when you start to see those same struggles, like, you know, and if you think back to 2016, we're like, oh, man, has he done it? Has he finally turned the corner? Can he do this Andy Pettit transition and actually become a guy that doesn't throw hard and have success? And, you know, that was still, I think, up for debate. There was still some wondering if CC was able to truly make that transition. And I think we saw, you know, a lot of that. We saw the complete turn of that last year. And so when you start to see him go off the rails a little bit, and given his age and health with the knee, your mind's going to go to places where you're like, well, maybe he can't come back. Maybe he is hurt. Maybe this is it. Because at some point, and you got to believe that at some point with CC, unless the Yankees win the World Series and he rides off into the sunset and he just finishes the year off, at some point he's going to probably drop off of a cliff. I mean, it's gonna just get really bad and it's going to stay bad.
But we knew that. We knew that when they signed him to this one-year deal, and we're totally fine with that. It's almost like the Yankees and CC are in this to the end.
I agree, but I mean, I don't think we're there by any means.
I think don't
CC
either.
Still is competitive, big time, you know, and making good pitches in big situations. You know, he didn't get help in this particular outing, but I think he looked better than he had in the last what, three outings where he has been just really bad. So,
totally.
You know, you're looking at a guy who is who has the ability to make any adjustment. I mean, he's probably the most competitive, if not one of the, you know, top three most competitive guys on this team. He's not going to go out there and just not compete. You're going to get a competitive CC Sabathia every single time you go out there. And as the season goes on, that competitive juice just gets even more and more and more. And to me, he gets better as the season goes on and the pressure and the stakes go up.
It could have been a two-run performance if not for the two throwing errors. One of them was his own error, and then Andujar falling down.
Yeah,
and we look at the whole thing totally differently if that happens. But that's, again, that's the thing with CC. If things don't go right, his starts are going to be ugly. On the flip side, Severino, things went right for him tonight, but they don't even have to go right with the way he was throwing
right.
early in this game. Just the first three innings may have been the best he's ever looked.
I mean, one of the key things that I saw tonight was just his demeanor. And I mean, I cannot stand it when guys are struggling and they do these elaborate things. Like Tanaka drives me nuts when he's struggling. He wears it all over himself. Pineda I would literally want to just like run through the TV when he'd be pitching because he would show the frustration and emotion. Severino was the exact opposite of that tonight. This dude was loose, showing that he was loose. And just like having fun, smiling a lot, pointing at guys like, hey, nice play. That was good. That was easy. Let's go. And he just looked like he had so much confidence and the ball was coming out of his hands so smoothly and just popping the glove. It was a lot of fun to watch him pitch tonight. And just the demeanor and the confidence that he has is impressive.
Well, yeah, it's between a 6:30 start time and a Severino on the mound where he's just like, give me the ball. Give me the damn ball. We get that ball game over before 9:30. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. I love it. That is how you watch baseball getting older, man. You really appreciate that, especially when you have to do an hour podcast afterwards. I love it. Sevy's my man right now.
I really like those 6:30 starts. I think the Yankees should do them every time. What's really the difference between 6:30 and 7? People are still going to get there for first pitch.
Exactly. People will make it happen. They need to just put this through in baseball. Make it in the offseason. Put it in. All the 7:05 games now are going to be 6:30. I like it. It's a big, that half hour is a big deal.
Yeah, it really is a big deal.
Like, forget, that's what we were talking about, remember? Forget the pace of play. Just start the games earlier.
Well, today was a faster game.
I understand that, but it'll help. Just start the games earlier. But we won't cry about it if it's a 4-hour game and it's only 10:30. That's okay.
So what is it, do you think, about the Houston bullpen that can pitch well against everybody else in the league? Because they rank first in the American League in bullpen ERA at 3.02. And against the Yankees, they are essentially the Baltimore Orioles pitching staff. Coming into Wednesday's game, gave up 11 runs in 12 innings and 18 hits, 3.39 batting average against to the Yankees.
I mean, I think one of the biggest things, there's two. The Yankees have... you know, have some familiarity with these guys from seeing them recently in the 7-game series. They just played them, you know, one time this year in Houston. But there's no easy out in this lineup. And Houston has to, you know, go through that knowing that, you know, after you get, if you get through this guy, there's another big guy behind him and another big guy behind him. They're relentless. They take pitches. They work the at-bats. It's not, there's really nowhere that you can just have a nice little breath, throw some juicers over the middle of the plate. Like there's nothing there for that. So they're putting a lot more pressure on them. And then obviously there is a rivalry. There is a higher intensity with these games because of what's already happened in the postseason with these two teams. So I think all of those things combined just make it that much more of an effort for the Houston pitchers. So
I think you said it, pressure, because look at the game on Monday. It was a big lead. Davinsky and Giles come in, no problem, shut the Yankees down. And then the next day out, it's a key situation. The Yankees have a little bit of momentum, and they crap all over themselves. Their nuts shrivel up. So I think it's 100% pressure.
Yeah,
and I think I think the Astros are going to add to their bullpen. I think they have to. But if anything, just so they can throw somebody else out there against the Yankees and we're not just seeing Ken Giles and Davinsky and Will Harris come out there. But if they go into the playoffs, they're just gonna use their starters again because that worked for them last time.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to throw the kitchen sink at the Yankees. That's the thing about this team is they have, when you have, you know, three, four dominant starters you can use that fifth guy, and then potentially if you have a longer guy that would fill in the rotation, kind of like Colin McHugh or Lance McCullers, they pretty much use both of those guys out of the pen. And even what's the other kid's name that I can't think of right now? But they use these guys out of the bullpen at Peacock, and they were effective against the Yankees. So they do have arms, whether they're in the bullpen right now or not. And that's one of the things when you're in a long series with them that makes them, you know, a lot harder, because they do have a lot of different options. And he's not afraid to use any of those guys.
Well, a couple things we're going to see the next time if they do play him in the playoffs. First of all, the Yankees are going to see Gerrit Cole, which they didn't, which he's been maybe even better than Justin Verlander this year. And also they're going to add a bullpen arm. And then the Yankees are going to add a starter, and hopefully they're going to have their offense all healthy and clicking, which really hasn't happened yet.
That, and they'll have their bullpen fully healthy. If we're talking about perfect worlds here, and that's just what we're talking about. If everybody's healthy and both teams land, what we think they're going to get at the trade deadline, then yeah, you're going to have a very, very potent both sides of the diamond, man. I mean, our offense is going to be filthy at that point, and if it is at the end of the season, everybody's healthy, good luck. And if these games are in Yankee Stadium, Yankees are going to be very tough to beat.
Yankees go into Baltimore for four games. Orioles are trash. They have a 17-38 record as of recording right now. And if Buck Showalter has not cried already this season, I think the Yankees could make him cry this weekend. Although Thursday, Sonny Gray might make you cry. So if you and Buck might be crying.
There's going to be a lot of crying if Sonny Gray gets lit up by the Orioles. That park and Sonny Gray,
not a good mix.
Just scares the living hell out of me. I mean, the Orioles still have guys who can hit the ball out of the ballpark. There's no doubt about that. They still have an offense that could put up some runs on you on any given day. Their pitching staff is trash. It's been trash for years. They haven't fixed anything. But you know, Camden Yards is a tough place to play. It's one of those places that has definitely eluded the Yankees at times. But it's also Yankee Stadium South right now. There's going to be a ton of. I mean, if you haven't noticed. Anybody watching, when you're watching the broadcasts, when the Yankees travel, Yankee fans are showing up in freaking groves. Like they are loud.
It was the Anaheim one was maybe the biggest.
Anaheim, but I mean, from you know, I'd say the last few outings, like we saw at Kansas City, it sounded like there were people. There's been a lot of Yankee fans all over the place. It's been impressive to me, and to me, it's been noticeably more this year, and rightfully so. I mean, I get it. If you are a New York native, someone from the tri-state area, there's a ton of people that have moved away. You know, you're gonna come see this team. They're exciting. They're young. Of course you want to go see them when they're on the road. So they're definitely a hot ticket, and it'll be interesting to see what the crowd is like in Baltimore. But I imagine it's going to be, I'd say, 60-40 Yankee fans.
Yeah, as it usually is, pretty much.
It's going to be ugly.
Yeah. Anything less than 5 out of 4 wins this weekend is unacceptable from the Yankees.
Yeah, they got to take advantage of this. They really do. They got to take advantage of it. Just like the Red Sox pounced and took advantage of all those sub-500 teams they played in the beginning of the season, Yankees got to do the same thing. They gotta keep that momentum going up and take advantage of all of these teams that should be beat. You know, we're on pace to win over 100 games right now, and they got to keep that momentum. I think that's right where they should be. That is right where they should be. They should be right around 100 plus.
All right, before we get out of here, want to read a mailbag. We don't normally do this on the Thursday shows, but we thought this one was good from actually a listener in Japan, right?
Oh, he lives in New York now. So this one is from it's from Rion55. He said, "Hey, I'm a big fan of the show and always enjoy listening. I'm from Japan and have been a big Yankees fan ever since Matsui joined the team back in 03. And now I'm living in New York City. Since I'm Japanese, I think I can give you guys some Japanese lessons." And this we both could have predicted this as you were saying something in Japanese. We're not as good as Gleyber Torres. In the latest show, you guys mentioned that you are Rakai is Japanese translation for you are soft. However, is actually used for more like materials are soft, or surfaces such as the wall is soft, or food is soft. So I would say that yawai or amai is a more accurate way to translating you are soft in Japanese, because what we want to tell Otani is that he is mentally weak. And both of these Japanese words cover this meaning. So the next time he comes to New York, just scream at him, yawai or amai. Thanks, guys, for the great show. I love it. It's actually easier to say and easier to remember. So yes. I will not forget that now.
Perfect. Rion55, perfect mailbag. Thank you for submitting that. And I don't know if you saw, but I almost said Tanaka. Otani needed a whole 3 extra days for that workload management before starting against the crappy Detroit Tigers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They got to. That's a big 3 days. You know, you got to make sure the guy's ready to go and going up against a subpar team and making sure that everything is catering to him. Got to do it. Yo, I
am I, Otani. Okay, if you guys want to submit mailbag questions for the next show, which we will answer, go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. And you can also do so by following the show on Twitter at Yankees Podcast and joining the Facebook group, The Bronx Pinstripe Show. Also, call the voicemail line, 646-480-0342. We have not done voicemails in quite a long time. So if we get a good batch this week, we will do those on the next show. Rate and review the show in iTunes. Give us a 5-star review and rating. Make it funny. Make it sincere. Make it whatever you want to be. You'll be entered to win a t-shirt. We will pick a winner for the next show. And last but not least, June 29th tickets against the Red Sox is our next BP Crew event. Those are on sale now. Those tickets are going to be hot. It's going to be a playoff atmosphere. Go get them now on the Fan Shop. Scott, any last words before we get out of here?
Yeah, so those tickets are there. We are going to do the deal again for 10 plus. This is a premium game for the Yankees, so they charge us a lot more money for these tickets. So we're doing, if you are captain, you set up a group of 10 or more, your ticket is on the house. So get your friends together, get this group together, because it's going to be a lot of fun. And again, if you're the guy that sets up, or girl who sets up your friends, and there's 10 or more of you in the group, just sign up or send me an email and I'll get you a code for your ticket to be free. It's going to be that game is going to be ridiculous. It's a Friday night atmosphere. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It's the start of the 4th of July week. So most people are probably going to be off from work that entire next week. I'm going to be off from work that entire next week. It's going to be a hell of a lot.
There you go. Drink them while you got them.
We'll talk to you guys on Monday.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again guys for your support. Really appreciate it, and go Yankees.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.